We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
Give us the deets on that Mike Trout contract.
So it is large and it is lengthy.
Middays on the Score.
Oh, Mazel Tov.
I meant what I said.
The top of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Coach Fitz and the Big Ten West Division and Holiday Bowl champions at Ryan Field this fall when they host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season tickets on sale now at nusports.com. And Scott from Davenport pointing out that, hey, who says Mike Trout's not interesting? He has the Super Pretzel endorsement.
What?
He does. He's.
I love pretzels, but I've never heard of a Super Pretzel.
I'm sure you have.
No. I've never seen a Super Pretzel.
There it is. It's right there. He's on the cover of Super Pretzel.
Oh, well, now I've seen it.
Or maybe that's his alter ego.
Super Pretzel?
Yes, maybe when called upon, when trouble strikes, he morphs into Super Pretzel.
What are his... He's got the Millville Meteor, right? That's one of the nicknames, yeah. But it doesn't stick. For, he's got Keed. Those are his two...
Yeah, that's his.
Those are his two baseball reference approved nicknames.
Those are terrible.
They're not great. Millville Meteor isn't terrible.
But no, that sounds like...
It's very throwback.
Like a forced retro name.
The very throwback.
Millville Meteor.
Mm-hmm. No doubt about it.
Babe Ruth had like 10 great nicknames.
Well, yeah, but they were all about him being drunk.
And fat.
Well,
no, they were about him being good or looking like a baby. Oh, speaking of which, might be a little I'm Fat Tournament preview
this,
coming
this
up.
There's
going
to be some I'm Fat love mm-hmm. coming up.
It might be I'm Fat Podcast Tournament live look-ins coming your way very, very soon.
Ryan Watt writes this on Fangraphs about Mike Trout. Mike Trout has been worth 64.2 wins above replacement since 2012. Nearly 20 more the next greatest mark achieved over that period. That's Buster Posey at 45.5. If you look since 2013, which takes out Trout's debut 2012, and which wasn't that good, the gulf is just as wide. He's got 54.1 wins. That's as far ahead of second place, Josh Donaldson at 35.7, as Donaldson is ahead of the 54th place, Adam Jones. Trout holds the record for most WAR through age 21, through age 22, through age 23, through age 24, and through age 26. Ty Cobb beat him out for age 25. Ah. Mike Trout is the 23rd all-time great in career WAR through age 30, and he's only 27 years old.
Tim says, the more I think about baseball fans saying they haven't seen Trout play, I can see how that could happen. To really see him play, you need to commit 3 hours to get 4 at-bats that last a total of 10 minutes. And in the new era of 3-outcome baseball, there are fewer opportunities to see him play defensively. Well, there's also highlights. I mean, every morning, you can pick up your phone and get everything he did the night before.
Is this what we're seeing? The issue that baseball has with its fan base right now?
That's a great question.
I mean, this is what's most clear about it, is that baseball's biggest fans, and there's nothing wrong with being 54, 57, 60 years old. I'm not saying this from an ageist point of view. I'm just saying if you're not on Twitter or if you're not using the MLB app or if you're not into MLB.tv and you've just got your local cable deal and this is how you consume baseball because that's how you've always consumed baseball – nothing wrong with that.
But you've got MLB TV.
You don't. No, I'm saying if you don't have MLB TV. If you're off that network, if you're not paying for that extra sports package, whatever it is, then the next like $8 I think a month that you've got to pay for that channel and I don't know, TLC or something like that, then you're not seeing these national highlights thrown in front of you and nobody really watches Sports Center anymore. I mean, I don't sit down and watch it every night or every morning like I used to, and I can't imagine that 50, 55, 60 years old are watching a whole lot of Sports Center NMU either.
Well, look, middle-aged people look at their email every day. And if you have any, you could have MLB.com.
They have so many things to forward, Dan. They're not paying attention to the actual either forwarding things.
You have to forward birther and anti-vaxxer stuff. Come on now.
If it's been forwarded 17 times, it's good for an 18th.
No, there is MLB every morning sends me what's called MLB morning lineup.
Yes.
Right around 8 o'clock every morning.
Every single morning.
Right there in my inbox. 10 burning questions before opening day. The latest on Gio Gonzalez and the Yankees. Kershaw won't start opener. Bueller ruled out too. Exploring the lighter side of Ichiro. Braves could break camp with prospect Wilson. Tanaka on the mark with 7 Ks over 5 innings. Thor versus DeGrom, a matchup you can't miss. It's there all every single day. You too, even if you are age 57. If you are age 60.
You can get this email. You can sign up for the email. You're not wrong.
And they just send you an email. It doesn't cost you anything. And you click on video. Mike Trout does amazing things. Wow.
Also, to the texter saying I can't be a fan of pretzels when I've never had a super pretzel, that's the bit today. That's the bit. Yeah. We had a caller call in saying he loves baseball. Loves it. Favorite sport. He's never seen Mike Trout.
Nor could he.
Never seen Mike Trout.
Could not recall Bryce Harper's
name. Well, that's more difficult. You get lost in the hair, maybe. I mean, it's just such a beautiful, flowing locks. How could you pay attention to anything
else? I've never seen Mike Trout, and I'm not sure who Bryce Harper is.
If the guy doesn't realize there's baseball outside of Chicago, he is right in his own mind.
I don't recognize anything outside this. Somebody else texted in, I am a foodie. Tell me more about this food. Greg in Milwaukee is on the score. Hey, Greg.
See, the problem is that with baseball, you got three and a half hours invested every night. So all of a sudden, by the end of the week, you've got 30 hours invested in just your home team. So you don't go out looking for other stuff. Football, you watch your team on a Sunday for 3-4 hours or whatever. And then you still got a ton of time where you go, geez, I could soak in some other stuff. So you can go watch Kansas City or New England or Pittsburgh or whoever.
Sure.
But baseball, you're saturated with too much of it for your home team.
Greg, I get your point. Let me ask you a question, if you don't mind. Do you mind me asking how old you are?
57.
And
perfect.
Are you aware? Wow, you're right in the middle. That's awesome. So you're aware of MLB.TV and like the app and Twitter feeds and whatnot? Or are you not on that kind of stuff?
I have the MLB app and I listen to games on the radio whenever I'm driving, and I drive 100,000 some miles a year, and then I watch as much baseball as I can when we're out of town. If you know, if we're not watching. You know, I'm a Brewer fan, but then I also watch the Cubs and I watch the Twins. There's another team that I watch. Those are my main ones that I check into right away. But then, you know, to venture out of that realm of teams, it's rare, and especially with the Angels being on the West Coast and then being outside of our you know, the National League. You just don't see them. And I'm sitting here thinking about this contract today when you guys mentioned it. I'm going, geez, I've probably seen like 10 minutes of Mike Trout. You know.
So, but you've seen him. I mean, like, highlights have crossed your timeline or your app or whatever. Like, you're well aware that Mike Trout is the best player in the game, yeah?
Well, for the limited amount I've watched him, I'm going, Christian Yelich looked just as good or if not better than him when I watched him last year.
No.
So, I watched the whole thing with Yelich, but I said I don't have enough to compare upon because I don't watch Mike Trout an entirety in a game. And I know you can watch the highlights. You watch highlights on anything, it's going to look good. But if you watch an entire game, I'm sure it's a whole different animal. When
Greg, like, you know that Mike Trout has never finished outside the top four of MVP voting except for one season where he played 40 games, right?
No, I understand. I understand he's this high-powered figure in baseball, but you just don't – because of the nature of how much footage you get for – your own home team, you just do not see him. And I can speak for my business partner.
But you're in charge of what you see. That's what I guess we're missing.
I see enough of baseball. I don't want to give up on my family and my friends so I can watch Mike Trout in addition to my Brewers and my Cubs.
I think it's that big a sacrifice.
I think you just give up on Arcia at bats, and every time he comes up, just flip over to go watch Mike Trout. Yeah, I mean, it's within your own budget. You know, I get that you want to watch every minute of your Brewers game or your Twins game or whatever, but I mean, maybe this is our job. I don't know. Like, Mike Trout.
Are you insulting his family and friends?
Well, I don't know. Maybe are they not worth spending time with? I don't know.
Probably more interesting.
That's what you insinuated.
Well, I just if you have enough time that you've got secondary and tertiary favorite teams, if you're talking about you said you watched the Brewers and the Cubs and the Twins. My point is, make a little time for baseball greatness.
I think that's true. However, I think we're learning something about the chorus of texts and phone calls that we've been receiving here. There is a large segment of baseball fans that do not really know who Mike Trout is.
I think that's true.
They know him as an entity on the West Coast that exists and is supposed to be real good. But the very fact that Greg, as much baseball as he wants, as he watches rather, the very fact that Greg is calling in and comparing Trout to Christian Yelich, who had a great season last year, that's nowhere close. That's absolutely nowhere close to what Mike Trout is and has been. It's crazy. That's on baseball. That's what I'm coming up with now. That's where I'm at. This is now on baseball. It's on the Angels. It's on Trout somewhat to just keep on doing what he's doing and stay healthy and mash baseballs and be the best player who's ever played the game. He can lock that up in two or three seasons.
They play 162 games a year.
Yeah. So now it's on Rob Manfred. Now it's on baseball. Now it's on the marketing arm. Now it's on you to get this, to get your product, the actual top end of your product in front of fans that are not Angels fans.
Madison, Wisconsin. Dave, you're on WSCR.
Yeah, I'll tell you why a lot of people who are baseball fans or not don't know who Mike Trout is. It's because in today's age, I think you have to be a negative controversy to get airtime, to get attention. And I'll contrast Mike Trout, who
he's on television every at bat.
Pardon me?
Every time he steps to the plate, it's visible.
I know. No, here's my point. My point is people know who Bryce Harper is. People know who Manny Machado is. And a lot of what you see about those guys for Harper, you see it when he argues the strike three. And he looks like a jerk doing it, and he gets tossed out of the game.
Where do you see? Let me ask you, Dave. Where and when do you see that?
When Harper's, playing the Cubs, if he gets tossed out, I'll see it that way. I'm not a big Harper fan. I think I don't like the. It's always got to be about him, and he wants Major League Baseball to, allow him to celebrate like. Like I'm 57 too. I'm going to say celebrate like a goofball. So, if I read a headline that says that he's been tossed from a game, I'll go and click on whatever link it is and watch that.
But that's on you, though. That's your choice.
That is
choice. Why? The question, why would you choose, if you don't like him for that, why would you choose to watch that?
It just reaffirms my beliefs that players like Mike Trout, players like Anthony Rizzo, and Chris Bryant, guys who don't need the drama, guys who don't...
Wait, Anthony Rizzo doesn't celebrate?
They celebrate, but they don't celebrate like, it's different.
How?
Know what I'm talking
how
about.
Is it, how
he
is
celebrates
it,
for the Cubs.
Yeah, how is it different?
Well, look at Chris Bryant, right? When Chris Bryant gets hit, does he make a big deal out of it? Maybe last year, once or twice, he might have.
What are we doing? What are we talking about here, Dave?
Dave, let me ask you this. Let's shift gears just a little bit here. Don't you think that what you're saying is that you've seen a number of those players in the playoffs and you haven't seen Mike Trout in the playoffs?
Well, you can't deny. I mean, the Angels are not a good baseball team. That's probably the number one reason.
Haven't been. Appreciate the phone comment. I don't want to get bogged down.
Go Bears!
In any of that.
No, I'd rather not.
So I'm going to move this forward just a half step if I can. Really, any direction would be fine.
Anthony Rizzo doesn't celebrate?
No. Nor did he go over to the Reds dugout looking for a fight, trying to get his ass kicked for making a point. But I outside of any of that, let me ask this. Mike Trout makes the playoffs one or two more times in his career. Are we having this conversation?
Or
I don't think so.
Well, maybe.
I think the playoffs matter more. I think that's what we're learning, too.
No, you know what
we have? The playoffs matter more to viewers.
But nobody watches them.
Who consume. I think I disagree. I think what we're learning here, it might be anecdotal, but what we're learning here is that the viewer who's not on this, Twitter edge, on the MLB.TV edge, who's not consuming the vast majority of baseball through highlight clickery, who's just consuming the local provincial team, your old school baseball viewer, they see the rest of the league through the playoffs and pretty much through the playoffs only.
Here's the thing, though, too. If you, I think a lot of these people who say, I spend 3 hours watching my team, I think that's a lie. There are very, very few people, even ridiculous fans of their home team, that are able to watch every single minute of every single game of their, and if you do, you know what you get? Highlights. If that's really true,
yeah,
and you're watching a well-done major league broadcast, maybe a little pregame, a little bit of postgame, a little bit of in-game, you're always seeing other stuff, and you're seeing MLB ads and MLB promos. So a lot of I don't believe a lot of the stuff that I'm hearing.
And if you're a White Sox or Cubs fan, really if you're a fan of any team and Trout comes into your city or you're visiting LA, the visiting broadcast, the non-Mike Trout broadcast, will break in with a graphic or a leaderboard or, you know, all this kind of stuff that we're doing about Mike Trout for the first hour every time he comes at bat.
Jason Benetti and the White Sox and Stone of the White Sox broadcast, they never miss an opportunity.
They live for that.
They never miss an opportunity to put Mike Trout's greatness in context.
Really, they do a good job of that, putting the league into context for you as they come into town. But yeah, of course, Mike Trout. He's the story of every game he plays.
There is no White Sox fan who watches White Sox baseball that has any excuse for not knowing, understanding, appreciating Mike Trout.
Agreed.
It's fed to you by professionals.
Agreed.
This segment's brought to you by Fogo de Chão Brazilian Steakhouse. Bone-in cowboy ribeye is back at Fogo de Chão Brazilian Steakhouse in Chicago. Taste the richer flavor of bone-in cuts from ribeye to beef ribs, all fire-roasted and carved tableside. Reserve now in Chicago, Rosemont, and Naperville at Fogo.com. We got a bunch of phone calls lined up. Yes!
Let's do this.
Have we are this going day. To. Don't go anywhere. Bernstein and McKnight on the score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
I'm an old man. I hate everything but Matlock.
Getting a lot of that today as we're celebrating Mike Trout's $430 million contract.
Holy God, wow. We're trying.
Quite go like this. The bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Don't miss your chance to watch Big Ten football at Ryan Field this fall. As the Big Ten West champion, Northwestern Wildcats host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season tickets on sale now at NUSports.com. Jim is in Oak Lawn. He's on the score. Hi, Jim.
Hey, how are you, Dan Connor? Great show. Love your show.
Thank you.
Just wanted to talk about the best player that I've ever seen, and I consider, and I don't want to sound like Hawk Harrelson, the best right-handed hitter I've ever seen was Big Frank Thomas. And I was just doing some of the numbers for the first 7 years, and I'm going to take this, and I want you to explain to me about the analytics. I'm a 58-year-old guy, but I'm not against the analytics. I love numbers. But anyway, in my numbers, I see that Frank and Trout were close in runs. Big Frank had more hits. He had more homers. Trout had more extra base hits. Big Frank's lifetime or first 7 years. I'm comparing.
Yeah, but he's not. Instead of cherry picking old stats, early on, I gave the list of wins above replacement historically in those first years, and Frank Thomas is not on that list.
Okay, no, I understand that, Dan. I appreciate that. But what my point is, for my knowledge, not for sake of argument, just for my knowledge.
Sure.
From my day, those old stats are the stats, you know, that we look at, and I know baseball's changed. Yeah.
But also,
in any event, how does that equate?
It doesn't.
Yeah, okay. So Jim, let's just boil it down then. Mike Trout plays center field. Frank Thomas played first base.
Badly.
Kind of. You know what I'm saying? So that
not average.
I don't think it was average. If you want to give him average, that's fine. Mike Trout has been... alternately, in some years, one of the better center fielders in the league.
Frank Thomas is damn good. His runs above average in his first 7 years defensively, -5.7, -18.2, -17.9, -17.4, -15.4, -23.1, -19.4. That's horrible defense.
Yeah, correct. All right. That's what I'm looking for because I didn't understand all of that. I did want that knowledge. I appreciate it. But I look at those old numbers.
Okay, my suggestion is don't.
Okay.
My suggestion is we now have better numbers that give us a much better indication of how good or bad somebody is at baseball, and they're really relatively easy to understand.
For instance, let me give you this. In 2014, appreciate the phone comment. In 2014, when Mike Trout won his first MVP, he had an on-base percentage of .377. That's very good. It's gone up every year since then. 402, 441, 442. 460. It has led the American League each of the last three seasons and led both the American League and National League in 16 and 18. Like, he's that kind of guy. He's led the league in walks three times. He's led the league in runs four times. His OPS has led the league every, OPS plus rather, has led the league every year since 2015, 16, 17, 18, all that. I mean, he's that kind of player. I understand that in the past you've seen guys who came on like gangbusters and were absolutely wonderful and fantastic and all that kind of stuff. Trout's better. He has been. He just has been.
I didn't think that this would veer into this direction today, but I'm always surprised. It's okay.
Here for it.
It's good. Absolutely here for it. John in Schererville, you're on Bernstein and McKnight.
Hello. Hear me?
Yes. Yeah, we got you, John.
Okay. I'm 48. I'm one of those 70s childs that saw all the Hall of Famers, Schmidt, you know, that whole generation. Mm-hmm. Baseball is a generational thing, hence the slow play that everybody complains about. But I go and I saw Trout five times already, and he's already hit a walk-off home run in a 1-0 game, hit a home run in a blowout game in Detroit. But what's impressive is just everything. You watch him hustle every play in the outfield, whether it's to back up somebody, whether it's to try to rob a home run. And I heard the earlier caller talk about Yelich. Okay, Yelich had one season. Try to do it year in and year out. This guy is electric. This is a mantle without the knee problems. I mean, there's nobody in baseball right now that can touch him. And as far as baseball fans go, yeah, it's tough. I consider myself a true baseball fan. I will check out West Coast games. I will travel to watch players play. This guy is everything baseball needs. I just wish he would get a little bit more props. He's not the, you know, the Rizzos, the Bryants, the guys that are kind of a celebrating things, or they're just, they got that personality. This guy just plays.
He does. Yeah, John, I think it's a pretty decent phone call. I'm getting from you guys that it is harder to watch Mike Trout than I'd realized. I guess I just figured that of all the things that happen after you go to bed, like if you're a baseball fan, if you're down there watching your 3.5 hours of Cubs games and you're just like, I'm tapped out. I got the family. I got to put the kids to bed. I got to get up early for work the next morning or whatever. That Mike Trout's not crossing the threshold of stuff you check in with the next morning or highlights you pop in on just before you go to bed, something like that. It's just he's not crossing the threshold. I didn't expect that because for me, That's like every morning. I do the work that I've got to do to come in here, make sure I caught everything in the Cubs and Sox games. If I didn't watch all of the particular game last night, I get caught up. And then I check what Mike Trout did last night.
I swear, that's email.
What I do.
Or it's in your Twitter timeline. It gets to you if you're managing everything correctly.
Well, you also can't assume, especially for the crowd that's been on the phone lines, that they have social media.
I'm ruling out Twitter.
They definitely have Facebook.
That's probably true.
Most old white people have Facebook.
Okay. There's a higher usage rate for.
But you can't say, you can't go like curtailing a Twitter timeline because a lot of people don't have Twitter. You look at the total impact of different social media platforms. Twitter's not it.
I think that's pretty clear.
Yeah, and obviously baseball isn't optimizing its Facebook reach because we know that most older and middle-aged white people are on Facebook.
Yeah, that's data-driven.
And that's who we're hearing from today.
Well, that's baseball fans.
Correct.
I mean, that's kind of the face of baseball, though they probably ought to broaden that some.
You think?
Yeah, maybe a little.
Southside Johnny, you're on WSCR.
Good morning, muchachos. How are you, Johnny?
Good.
So you guys just kind of were talking on what I wanted to bring up, a question, just a generic question to pose to you guys. Social media, it was supposed to make the world more connected. It's supposed to make it smaller. We're supposed to be more aware of what's going on around us in the world, in politics, in trends, in sports. So why is it that the superstars from the 80s and 90s, everybody knew who they were? You said Canseco. You said Ozzie Smith. You said Mike Schmidt. You said Nolan. Any of those names, people knew exactly who you're talking about. But then in today's age, back then they didn't have the social media and the internet and everything. Now we do. Why is it more people don't know about the superstars?
I think because there's more things to watch. I mean, there's more places to spend your attention. This from the 847. It's not hard to watch Mike Trout. It usually requires intent. Maybe the intent isn't there. Maybe being a baseball fan takes more attention now. Maybe being an NBA fan, an NFL fan, it takes more attention if your league isn't putting it in front of you the way the game of the week used to put it in front of you, the way This Week in Baseball used to put it in front of you. Used to be, and you can check me on this, Dan, because I crossed over. I was in the Sports Center era. All those highlight packages were brought to me. I had one place, three, four places to watch stuff. There was one place to watch everything that happened in baseball. And if you were a baseball fan, you dedicated that extra hour per week, wherever your This Week in Baseball show aired, you sat down and watched that, and you got the league. You were good. You had the whole thing.
And you had the Red Book and Green Book that would come out every year.
Sure.
You would read those and baseball cards. And a really significant portion of your knowledge was derived literally from the back of baseball cards. And you wanted to collect all the all-stars, and you knew who everybody was. You'd get the same bums in the same packs that you'd get. You'd sit on the front stoop at the convenient on Waukegan Road or Ford Pharmacy, and you'd sit out there, and you open them up, and you put it all in a shoebox, and tuck it under your arm and ride your bike home. And that was your baseball knowledge.
Here's an honest question, and maybe chime in on text if you want. Maybe it's better on text than a phone call. If you are the fan we're talking about, the 45 to 60-year-old baseball fan, are you aware of Baseball Reference? Like, do you use the website baseballreference.com or FanGraphs for that matter? I'm guessing Baseball Reference is going to be the more acceptable, more accessible, more readable one, because that's. I mean, I've joked about it a ton, but like when I found out about baseballreference.com, I sat myself, it was freshman year of college. I lost 3 days. I went away. People knocked on the door with a wellness check to make sure I was still alive.
Because of all the rabbit holes you go
just,
down.
You just
keep
go
clicking,
through Baseball Reference and you learn about all these players and all the, they're all there.
We've tried to do a lot of that on this show. We've tried to bring you a lot of that and actually pursue some of those rabbit holes and have some fun with some of those connections, because that's one of the great joys of baseball, statistical interconnectivity of it. This segment's brought to you by New Mail Medical Center. Discover the new you in newmailmedical.com. We take a break for a little basketball?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right, let's do that. Mark Deeks from London is one of the NBA experts who is really, really smart. And we love talking with him. He can tell us about the Bulls. He can tell us about upcoming draft picks, possibly the tankathon, how it's all going down. He's next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
What was your happiest moment of the month when Shaq ran down that loose ball?
Yeah, it was a great play. I love those effort plays, man.
Let's talk some NBA with Mark Deeks, Sky Sports NBA, ShamSports.com. You should be following him at Mark Deeks NBA on Twitter. He joins the Bernstein and McKnight Show on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, home of F-150s for $229 per month. Deeks, how's it going, man?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Well, good morning, whichever you'd rather. All is well. How are you doing?
Well, a little dismayed at the Bulls' victory over the Phoenix Suns in Phoenix. I think in putting Cristiano Felicio out there, in making sure that maybe there was a little bit of resting going on, they still could not help themselves and ended up winning their 20th game.
Counterpoint. You don't want to be as bad as the Suns, otherwise your rebuild will probably never end. So try to think of it that way. They're good enough to be near the top of the lottery, but not bad enough that they can't beat Phoenix. So don't worry. It's not too bad.
I guess we've been going back and forth the last couple of weeks, Mark, about the defensive effort or lack thereof that the Bulls have been able to put in. As the offense has gone up, Lauri Markkanen's slump aside, the defensive anything, cohesion, effort, talent, scheme, it's just not been there. And that's supposed to be Boylan's thing. I wonder where you think they're at in terms of having talent that can get it done versus just not being interested in the scheme that's being run.
It's probably hard to stay motivated when you are playing games such as that against the Suns, where you know that your front office does have an eye to you losing. They never outright say it, but like you say, if you run Cristiano Felicio, having benched him for pretty much the entire season, in a game against a team with 17, whichever it is, wins, everyone knows what's going on there. There's not a great incentive for the team to win. Thus, subconsciously perhaps, it's going to be difficult for players to buy in It's not that they're not professional, but we don't, with respect, gentlemen, we don't always produce our best at work every day. No one does. That is what it means to be human. If you are biding time, as the Bulls are, they're playing out the last dozen games or whatever it is of the schedule, with a view to the future, not much to the present, how motivated can the players be? You can say they're playing for their jobs. Yes, they're playing to impress the coach, and may stick around the front office. You definitely will. They're playing for the future up to a point, but what are they going to do in the next 12 games than against the previous 70? It's probably hard to stay motivated. That's not an excuse, but I'd count on that probably is a reason.
Do you think the Denver Nuggets are worthy of attention as we get closer to the playoffs, as meriting status as a genuine contender?
Yes, they're a forward contender in the sense that they, as great as Nikola Jokic is, he's not the man to lead you every night, and even though he's a tremendous point center, someone needs to get him the ball. The Nuggets have been as good as they are because they've been able to sustain lengthy injuries to Will Barton and Gary Harris and even Paul Millsap, three of their five starters due to their tremendous depth. But now those players have been brought back. They're not fitting all that well. Murray hasn't made a leap. Harris is a fraction of his former self due to injury. Will Barton is finding Kobe out there, which was fun and useful last year, but he's going too far with it this year. So they're a fourth contender. But they're a legitimate one. They're tied with the Golden State Warriors. They are very potent and much improved defensively. They have depth, which is vital. Yes, rotations will shorten, but when we compare their depth to, for example, the Philadelphia 76ers, you don't have reliable presences off the bench. The Nuggets do. They have Monte Morris, who is prone. They have Malik Beasley, who's become one of the best pure shooters in the league. They are a legitimate contender. Of course, they are significantly untested. They didn't make the playoffs last year despite going 46-36. They, in fact, lost their last game of the season against the Minnesota Timberwolves in a playing game. So they're not battle-tested in that respect. But no one's battle-tested the first time. That's what battle-tested means. So the fact that they haven't done this before does not mean they're not a legitimate contender now. They're certainly not favourites. The fact that they are tied for the top seed in the Western Conference does not mean they have the greatest or equal greatest chance of getting out of it. But they do genuinely have one.
Let's talk about the team on the top of the Eastern Conference. The Bucks sit fairly comfortably on top of things. We all talked after the deadline, and I believe you're pretty happy with the moves the Bucks were able to make. Have those moves performed and returned in a way that you expected for Milwaukee?
Somewhat. When we consider that the Washington Wizards used 4 second-round picks just to dodge the luxury tax, and the Bucks used 4 to bring in Nikola Mirotic, it's easy to see why they'd be happy at the deadline. Unfortunately, they seem to have fallen a little bit into the trap that everyone who coaches Mirotic does, which is hoping, if not necessarily expecting, to be able to play in a small forward. They can't. They're going to need to play Mirotic at power forward, which even though they've got Ersan Ilyasova and DJ Wilson already, the only position that's really going to suit him going forward. They've had some problems defensively a little bit in trying to play Mirotic at the 3 spot. That said, we're talking about the best defense in the NBA here. We're talking about a team that executes its schemes very precisely and very deliberately. They're deliberately dropping back with Brooke Lopez. They're allowing teams to pull out from 2-point range, even if those shots are relatively open. They know what they're doing, and they do it very well. They have the NBA's best record because they've been the NBA's best team. Again, they are not battle-tested, but we must not over-worry about that as something to count against them, because no one's battle-tested the first time. And not being battle-tested doesn't mean you're not capable. And if anything, there could be an argument made that being the first time they've ever been in a position anything like this will help them. They're not burdened by previous memory of failure. They're extremely good. Giannis is ridiculous. The complementary pieces around them are very good. Malcolm Brogdon's injury is a deep problem. Mm-hmm. If he's not back in time, can't negate that. Tony Snell is not the same. That said, whilst they don't have an optimum backup for Malcolm Brogdon, they do have so much else in the rest of their starting four and key bench contributors like Mirotic that they're not going to fall away from that. If you're going to have a quote-unquote serious injury to an important player, at least he's their fifth starter.
Where does the NCAA tournament fit in your basketball world? What does it mean regarding the way you're looking at future pros or the way you look at the game? Does it have a place, or is that sort of a side dish?
It helps a bit in the sense that you do get to see who can step up. And more than anything, it's a great theater. I love that. It's my favorite aspect of American sports. And to have a straight knockout like that is a beautiful thing. The upset potential is tremendous. In terms of evaluating a prospect's ability, It's marginally impactful, but you've got a whole total body of work prior to that on which to evaluate potential. And what we should remember is that we're evaluating potential rather than reality. What I will say, which is why I say it this time every year, is to those who think college basketball is much better than NBA basketball because they try harder, they don't try harder, they just make it look harder because they're not as good. So I just want to preemptively strike against that narrative, which is going to come out over the course of the next week. The NCAA tournament is brilliant. College basketball, for all its structural flaws, is a great fun product. It's not better than the NBA necessarily.
The Clippers are going to make the playoffs, and with their actions at the deadline, I think you probably expected that they didn't think that was going to happen. Where are they at in terms of their prospects in the playoffs are bad if they face the Warriors, but heading forward here, they're pretty damned interesting.
Especially with Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah.
They really are. They really are. They've got the potential to be the next great super team. They've got some excellent core players around them to build around, plenty of assets after the deals they made. Even the ancillary benefit of the Tobias Harris trade was being able to put Danilo Gallinari at power forward, a position he should play hereafter, much like we just talked about with Mirotic. They were able to get Ivica Zubac for, frankly, nothing. I mean, they had a tremendous deadline. They already were quite replete with draft assets and financial flexibility, with some good young players. It's really promising. The narrative for a generation about it being the Clippers and about not being a draw, I don't think that matters now. Because even those players that they do have that aren't expiring, like Montrezl Harrell and Lou Williams, that's a combined $14 million for two frankly excellent players. They've really positioned themselves really, really, really well. They already had, but the trade deadline has only made it better because they offered what Harris was worth. He rejected it, and they still were able to get Landry Shamet and future assets for that player. They've done extremely well. The fact that they've been able to trade their best player and still make the playoffs, if anything, an improved version of what they were prior, speaks to an excellent year.
Talking with Mark Deeks of Sky Sports NBA and ChamSports.com on the Bernstein and McKnight Show on The Score. Last night, Dirk Nowitzki became the sixth leading scorer in NBA history, passing Wilt Chamberlain. And when you look at the impact that he's had and what he's meant as a European import, the foreign players in the NBA of their era that probably heralded these rapid changes to the game, I would argue, are Nowitzki and Manu Ginobili for how they played, what they represented, how they changed definitions positionally. What is top of mind for you in the context of Dirk Nowitzki in basketball history?
Well, I'm not old enough to remember this guy, but Petrovic as well was a pioneer in that respect. Everyone says he was certainly an excellent player. We do continue to push back these boundaries because of players such as Dirk, and we must remember how fierce and unique what he was. I say was, not because he's changed, but because the league's orthodoxy has caught up around him. But the days when he could run, and he could run well for a seven-footer, also dropped that unblockable fadeaway and put up, in his early days, quite a large proliferation of three-point shots. This was an era of the two posts, of however everyone 7 foot must take touches in the post. That was the orthodoxy, that was the groupthink, that was the norm, that was the rules, basically. The fact that we had someone who was so good as to indisputably counteract that, paired with a coach like Nelson, who was liberated enough to employ him in that way, that is what has helped change the game. Dirk has helped change the game. I'm glad to see that as this season has gone on, he's been able to get back a little bit because he did look like an old man at the start of the year, but he's doing a little bit better later on, which is nice. I do hope there is one more left in him as long as he can still go up and down the court. As for his legacy and how that's changed the perspective of European players, well, I can't say we're completely done in this respect when Luka Doncic is still being picked third overall. There was nothing more that Doncic could have done. There's literally nothing more, gentlemen, that Doncic could have done, apart from, you know, be the best player on the EuroLeague title winner, be the best player on the EuroBasket winner. All right, if he wasn't, he was close enough, was. He was leading games, closing games, dropping these Harden-like setbacks, and everyone focused exclusively on a three-point percentage and his lack of separation speed. There's a European bias there. Dirk has helped to shift that. He's helped bring along players like Kristaps Porzingis indirectly because now it's fine for a 7 foot three player to be shooting jump shots. This isn't Bruno Sundog anymore. We're talking about a different era. I've got the reference. I've got the good one. But we're still not there because there is still a European bias against Luka Doncic. There is still a There's nothing more he could have done, and yet he didn't do enough to go first or even second in the draft. So thank you, Dirk, for everything, for all the doors you opened. Not quite there. Not quite there.
All right, before we let you go, you watch Zion Williamson play, and you see what?
My gut answer is one born out of my own paranoia. He's an absolutely transcendent, phenomenal player, an absolute bully that will never leave him. His ability to score, produce, and finish over everybody. Yeah, the talent level he's playing against in the NCAA is not what it will be in the NBA, but these things are not going to... He's not going to struggle to translate his skill and size. My paranoia comes from the size and whether that will be sustainable. That's an awful lot of weight to repeatedly put on a pair of knees. At the same time, you get him with an NBA strength and conditioning coach, they're going to love that pairing. So what I see is an absolute clear-cut number one. I don't think number two is even close. I see an NBA all-star and potential superstar. I hope they're able to nurture that and sustain his career for as long as possible, especially given the way he plays. But he's so young, his skills... I mean, if you remember Blake Griffin back in the day, he was an absolute freight train, yet he developed his skills sufficiently in his handle and shooting to no longer have to play in that way and sustain his career. There's every reason to believe Zion could be the same, considering how quickly he's developed. I see a superstar.
There you have it. Mark Deeks, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you, Jim. Have a good day.
That is Mark Deeks, Sky Sports NBA.
I hate to hear that hesitation around Zion.
I get it, though. No, I totally get it.
I get it. I don't... It's right that the smart people that deserve the NCAA and the NBA acknowledge it, mm-hmm. that they throw it out there as a possible issue, but the dude's going number one. I mean, Mark didn't...
He said so.
Yeah, no, he didn't lie to you. He's going number one.
Yeah, I was still drifting in Bruno Sundov memories. He invoked there.
Corner three, if there ever was.
Well, we have some very special things coming your way on the Midday Midway. The I'm Fat podcast does something time every year called March Fatness. Is this right? We have play-in games?
We have play-in games.
Surprise play-in games. I also have a movie list that I'm glad I was bad at this, and usually I'm good at movie lists, okay. And there's a reason why I was bad at this. This is Nerdist.com ranked the 25 best movie cats. Now, you know I love movies, but I hate cats.
Okay.
I only got three of the 25.
Not going to have many cats
I only
on
got
that
three.
List.
Think of the all-time movie cats.
I got a fast food franchise that is inadvertently saving lives and a fantasy league that even you will be interested in.
Ew.
The Midday Midway is on the way. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.